Thank you for checking out 90forchill.com, the podcast. This is your host, Catbus Russ, and if you've been listening on the Podbean feed for the past 3 years, thank you very much for your patronage. I'm just going to say Podbean's a great service for those intense podcast editors like, you know, myself. I have a multimedia background, at least from college, so I loved kind of the tools. It's just a very pricey platform, and there are better options, at least more affordable options. So 90forchill.com, the podcast, has changed to 90forchill, the podcast with Catbus Russ. It can still be found at 90forchill.com. If you want your Google Nest or Amazon Echo device to find the podcast, ask your device to play podcast by Catbus Russ, and that should get you here. This feed's going to stay up for at least the next year. Podbean does offer an affordable archiving system, something to consider if you want to get on this platform. All I can really say is that I'm not wasn't a fan of how tricky it can be to get it set up. I mean, I have a background in it, so it wasn't too hard once I started putting the clues together, but it's not very intuitive. They've been very good to me, besides for sending me Ben Shapiro ads. I can't say that they are a bad platform to be on. More affordable would definitely be Spotify for podcasters, and that's where you will find 90 for Chill, the podcast with Catbus Russ, and that's where all the new content will be. I'm just going to finish up the remainder of the paid period with some new episodes here, but otherwise, look for 90 for Chill, the podcast with Catbus Russ at 90forchill.com. Thank you. The following podcast is protected under the laws of the United States and other countries. Any unauthorized duplication, distribution, or reproduction may result in civil liability, criminal prosecution, and the wrath of the tall man. And that is something that I'm surprised I haven't seen at B-Fest. You figure the Phantasm movies at 90 minutes apiece would go there. That's where we're at right now. We've just done B-Fest 2024. And I would say that it's might have been the weakest lineup I've seen. Not as much deep hurting as I've been through, but yeah, this is I think Rory was discussing it as it's just playing the hits a little bit more this year. Like, oh, the return of the Apple since what, 2009?
I think it was might have been further back than that. I'm trying to think of it offhand.
Right, in the 21st century.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was, I mean, I think the event opened with a bang with the Grant Page tribute mockumentary Stunt Rock. Page is the greatest stuntman in Australia, and it led to pretty much any cool stunt happening in a movie getting one's half of the room saying stunt, the other half of the room saying rock.
Yeah.
So
they've done. It's not the first time they've done a Brian Trenchard Smith movie at B-Fest. This one, again, had it appeared at a previous show.
Yes.
But yeah, it was a really great choice to get the crowd going, because there's no plot to follow.
No, I was just...
it's just crazy stunts and a cheesy rock stage show.
Yes, the band Sorcery.
Yeah. Well, somebody commented, there's more of a plot in the musical numbers than there is in the rest of the show.
Yes. Right, it's just basically showing off Page's greatest stunts or his...
Recreating
some of the stunts.
The stuff he does.
Yes.
We're talking like Wile E. Coyote stuff.
Right, a lot of... And here's a clip of the stunt going wrong to start. Lots of setting himself on fire. And then... oh, yeah, we're going to make it work this time. I tried my best to shout out this is really a John Landis style director.
Oh, closer to the front, there were multiple John Landis jokes throughout.
Yes. but
you may have been beat to that one.
Yeah, my biggest question was, how did they get those dogs so sedated during the, there's a bunch of, if it's not stage performances by Sorcery, it's them just doing tracks in the studio, and you got dogs sitting by the bassist, just sleeping, dogs on the control panel. I'm thinking there was, all the drugs went to the puppies.
Put your bass on it. That's one of the running riffs of the show. Put your back on it or something.
Yeah, so a movie that followed it up was Hot Potato. And just listening to people talking about how bad this one was.
Yeah.
Basically saying it was Jim Kelly's trying to do all the choreography, which I don't think, I mean, I don't think was the case, but yeah, it doesn't make him look good. I've suggested on my social medias, now on Blue Sky at Cat Bus Russ, that basically he didn't get, a lot of it was just so he wouldn't sweat to ruin the fro. And, you know, making comments about the fat guy in the group.
Yeah, I think the big issue that set people off about this one was that failed comedy is the most painful kind of stuff you can have at a beef fest. It's why they don't do a lot of straight comedies.
It's funny, though, because I thought the fat guy in it, who only lived 5 years longer than the person I was comparing him to. It's like, damn, how much coke did they give Sam Kinison to do this performance? So I had a guy sitting in front of me who we were trading barbs with over jokes and such.
Yeah.
And then you got the Brain Sex Trilogy.
Yeah, Wonder Women is a Filipino exploitation film.
Vic Diaz!
That started... And that was, I do think it was interesting that the show started with effectively three 70s films in a row. Because Stunt Rock is very, very early 80s.
Yes.
But Wonder Women, which has a very funny riff tracks for it, but it was just as much fun in the live setting.
Yes.
Everybody cheering on Sid Haig. Mm. I finally got to meet up with my online friend Jessica Ritchie, the excellent film writer, and I was lucky enough to be able to sit next to her and her husband, and the guys in charge of the show were also sitting in that general area, yeah. So we were all trading quips, like the terrible old age makeup on the Mr. Burns-like character. Oh, yeah. It's Henry Winkler in that Christmas Carol movie.
I was thinking that was, I can't remember the name of the actor. I mean, he's probably going to be forever known as the voice of the mad scientist in Tim Burton's A Nightmare Before Christmas.
William Hickey.
Yes, thank you.
Right, William Hickey.
Yep, which, he's been in a bunch of, he was actually the original Puppet Master.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the big thing was the brain sex jokes. This is, you know, guy I was trading quips with, sorry I didn't get your name, he got my business card. You know, said, no, you can't bring up Demolition Man jokes since this is ahead of its time. And no, those didn't count because Sandra Bullock is Stallone's daughter in Demolition Man. No, it's not possible that she is the daughter, but it's a fun, dirty thing to think about. And I'll get to more Stallone later on, but it was also featured in the Bad Movie Bible YouTube series.
Yeah.
Shinobi Dokken, basically the ninja exploitation movie, where you get to see these women try to, like, I guess they had a little more conviction than whatever Jim Kelly was trying to do in Hot Potato, where there were no potatoes. And I'm surprised I didn't hear any potato. Smash them, bash them, put them in a stew. Some Lord of the Rings there.
So, yeah, stop trying to make brain sex a thing. It's fetch. And, yeah, after the scene, please stop. I think, yes. So, yeah, fun to see the range of Sid Haig. Because, you know, first thing, oldest thing I remember Sid Haig in was Galaxy of Terror.
Right.
And that's where he got big.
Mm-hmm.
Then from there we went to Full Moon Features.
In between we had the traditional. I went up on the stage for the first go round of the shorts, Wizards of Speed and Time.
Yes, which they play twice just for the hell of it this year.
Yeah.
And then your traditional Plan 9 from Outer Space.
Yeah, I didn't. You know, this one I did take a break from because I've seen Plan 9 before.
Yes,
but I will admit that the throwing the paper plates is a terrific visual every time. And it happens so often, it becomes a very funny game.
Yeah, I'd say and pie pans would be... Let's just go full out.
That would hurt.
Not the pricey... Hey, Frisbee from Back to the Future 3. But then, yes, we got to Demonic Toys, where I did get into an argument because this sponsor from St. Louis was saying, yeah, Full Moon Features, a lot of them are good, like Demonic Toys. This is the one I got to choose. There's a lot of bad, like Evil Bong. Evil Bong is good, in my opinion. It's all about, like, Demonic Toys, a good Full Moon Features has fun gore effects, silliness, and at least... one talented actor in it. Tracy Scoggins, it from TV, Babylon 5, which brings me back to rewatching at least the first season of Space recently. And actually, it's the second season. Oh, hey, can you come back to work for me? I don't know. Well, can't you get yourself fired? Yeah. Hey! Sir, yes? Babylon 5 is shite. Get out. I knew Tracy Scoggins first from a Highlander recurring character.
Demonic Toys I had casually had on once because Full Moon has done a few things with Elvira over the years. You can find these on Tubi where she hosts the Full Moon thing and occasionally pops up during the movie to make a joke. There is a genuinely good joke in Evil Bong, which is, okay, let's see how many times Tommy Chong says man, and there's a counter, and I think it was triple digits by the end.
Well, just that he's only in there for about 15 minutes, man.
Demonic Toys, I was trying to get some sleep during that one. Wow. This is the first year they've ever done Full Moon movies.
Oh.
Yeah.
So.
And we'll get to the other one they featured later.
Yes.
But I can kind of see why they waited to do Full Moon. Because, as one fella said, there is some good stuff, but they do... Well, it's an issue that they tend to force... I think that they tend to try and force these franchises.
Oh, no. You aren't bad. That's been this...
ridiculous high concepts.
No. The bad ones don't even have a high concept. Killjoy was part of the $10 feature disc I got from Allie a couple years ago. Nine Puppet Master movies and the three Killjoys, and the Killjoys are absolute garbage. Like, Charles Band should be ashamed of himself for that one.
Well, I think a lot of things Charles Band should be held accountable for.
Oh, this is the guy. You want high concept from Charles Band? It's basically the story of Castle Freak. Stuart Gordon's trying to get money to make a movie. He sees a poster on the wall. What is that? It's a castle, and it's a freak. Can you do something like that? So it's not high concept.
Then we had Hard Rock Zombies. This was the one... That was the one, I believe, that didn't have a Wikipedia page. So I went to this pretty much blind. It was from 1984, and it is very much an amateur hour. Because we have a heavy... Hard rock bands come into a town that hates hard rock music, even though these guys are... There's a whole sequence where they just run around the town and goof off like it's the Monkees, and they even speed up the camera and stuff. Mm. But the townsfolk don't like them, except a young gal who... A young girl who seems to be like 14 or 15, in whom the lead singer of the band develops a crush on, despite... at least by looks, there's a very obvious age difference. Mm. Well... They get waylaid by a pretty blonde hitchhiker who lures victims to a house mansion that's inhabited by an eccentric millionaire type and his, I think his wife. Now, it's either the wife or the grandma who's also the werewolf who uses switchblades.
Yeah.
And there's a little person, and there's a... just a general freaky looking guy, and then it turns out about the 1/3 mark that the guy's actually Hitler.
Oh yeah, no I do recall this one now. I know I saw, but it was kind of well appreciated on the Bad Movie Bible, right. Heavy metal horror yeah. features,
and from there the bandmates get killed off.
Yeah.
In various ways, and while the town's smashing up the records, and they get resurrected as zombies by way of a magical riff that had been tape recorded.
Yeah.
But then this was a point where I kind of fell asleep, as, you know, they try to get their revenge against those who killed them, then they come back to life as zombies, including Hitler, and they have to die and be resurrected again before they can rest in peace. And they really try to develop a romance between the lead singer and the young gal. And very little comes of it in the end. And it...
I don't know if we should be using that for...
And I commented... And it takes so long just to get to the zombie part. I paraphrased a joke from Red Letter Media's Best of the Wheel of the Worst episode featuring the Shoji Tabuchi Show. I don't watch the film called Hard Rock Zombies to not see Hard Rock Zombies.
Wow.
Then later when they start shambling around, I feel like Michael Jackson has a lot to be held to apologize for. But...
So... You slept through the chilling as well?
No, I did not sleep through the chilling. But
nobody was talking about it, I will say
that. Well, no, there were a lot of people who slept through part of it. Jessica slept through part of a big stretch of it. And when she came to, she said, this isn't even as interesting as the other Linda Blair movie. It's like this low-rent horror film that also features a closeted 50s actor as one of the principals. Because the chilling features Troy Donahue, and Monstrosity features Tab Hunter. Mm. And the chilling is...
I do Tab Hunter, but I do get into that. So I do have plenty of those Austin Powers. Oh, Austin, you've missed so much in the past 30 years. Man Land on the Moon. Moon, All Your Heroes Dying. Yeah, and Liberace is gay. I did not see that one coming.
But chilling, yeah, didn't really work people up, except that everybody was glad that the dog wasn't killed off. Dan Haggerty saves it himself in the end. But and it was an interesting variation on the cryogenics gone wrong premise, in that, in truth, they're not. It's really a front for just organ harvesting operations, but... through some really contrived circumstances involving how the bodies are stored, some of the corpses are brought back to life. But one of the weirder things is that it looked like a regional production, because it's set in Kansas City, but we were watching the end credits and it was filmed in L.A. But you wouldn't know... But aside from some mountains in the backgrounds, you wouldn't really know it. That's how low rent it is. That Jessica pointed out a thing that popped up in lots and lots of these movies was like police cars or building names, clearly actual places, like the plain font, very plain generic fonts and signs, and they're not just made up.
Yeah,
I think most of the movies had them in some capacity.
Right. So then one of the big features, Runaway.
And this was the glossiest movie of the show.
Yeah,
This is, for those who have not heard of it, is a 1984, was an early TriStar release and an early PG-13.
Yes, there's a lot of controversy. We thought the audio had died when we first see
the premises. I was worried about that too.
Yes. He never clears it. I don't care what they say. The Pegasus never cleared the titles.
But in any case, this was one of Michael Crichton's last writer-directorial efforts.
Officially.
One of his last, officially. And one of his last original concepts for the screen, as opposed to adapting one of his books. And here we have, according to Wikipedia's description, it's supposed to be 7 years on in the future, like early 90s. And robots, like service robots, are becoming a normalized thing in society. But they can malfunction and become a danger. So cops are now departments and police agencies that train the cops to handle these situations.
Now I have to stop and wonder. Are you sure this is really a Michael Crichton original? It sounds a lot like Bubblegum Crisis. And
the guys sitting near us said, "Oh, this had to have inspired Bubblegum Crisis."
No, I would like to go through the timetable, because Bubblegum Crisis probably came around the same time. Yes, so it's Tom Selleck and his mustache.
Yes.
Trying to stop.
We had amazing mustaches in this year's selection of movies.
Trying to stop Gene Simmons from...
Basically, Tom Selleck is the cop on the robot division. Beat. And there is very obvious foreshadowing regarding a flaw he has that's going to come into play in the big climax.
Yes, a very Hitchcockian flaw.
Yeah. we were making references about that too. But it turns out that someone is sabotaging robots so that they'll turn on their owners and cause general chaos.
Yes.
So... And it turns out to be Gene Simmons. I think this was his first acting role in that stretch during Kiss's makeup-free era, where he did a few movies, often as a heavy. Mm. And he's so obviously evil from the first time you see him.
Yeah.
He's an obviously evil guy, loves his work, and everybody just loved this character.
Yes, he's the best thing about the feature. I think the story kind of... really like, ooh, I better shoe in this device type stuff in the
telling. There are some pretty interesting devices, like the smart bullets.
And the smart bullets are great.
Pretty great. Really funky looking action scenes. Like,
but the spiders, which, we better be scared of them. And like, we see them twice. And
Bubblegum Crisis launched in 1987.
Ooh.
Okay. So yeah, this probably was. Could have been an inspiration for it.
So.
But
it's
a like a meat and potatoes 80s sci-fi movie.
Well,
action
I don't
picture.
Yeah, I just don't think it has the sense of humor that we got. And you could probably say, well, Ghostbusters did that, but you know, 48 Hours, like, there are some funny sequences in that film, but it's a pretty gritty feature.
Yeah,
I'm just saying that, you know, our smart we didn't have our smart aleck heroes yet.
Well, I think this film worked fine with that. There's some dry humor involving just the fact that we have cops having to deal with robots, and that, as it's established, in general, it's not the most exciting job to deal with malfunctioning robots. But, again, a lot of great 80s character actors, and
yes.
I was discussing with the guys. Why hasn't this show done Flight of the Navigator yet? It would probably be a huge hit, because the kid from that movie plays Selleck's son in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought from the announcement, this was a great match for B-Fest, because it's always nice to have one of these glossier 80s titles in. And it's not a hugely well-known one.
Yeah, it's not canon.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got, you know...
It was not a hit at the time. But very much a cable fixture in the 80s.
Yes, it was.
Early 90s.
No. Mom, Mom was a big fan of it. I had to explain it to a dad, so it's like, then we followed up with the movie I was looking most forward to, A Boy and His Dog.
Yeah, this is a Harlan Ellison adaptation of a many, many depressing sci-fi films of the pre-Star Wars 70s that takes place in a dystopian setting.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, this was the one that I kind of hit the wall with and slept through a chunk of. So I can't really say much about
it. Well, I mean, I found it to, like, this is just insane, but it's definitely, like, you know, recently with Screen Drafts having the Ozplation draft, I think this really laid the groundwork for the Road Warrior, at least environment-wise. You have your walled-off city, desert settings, the real weirdos, and then you get the entire storyline. Oh, so it's Don Johnson and his dog Blood, who has a telepathic connection to to each other, and basically the dog's around just to get him laid. And this is why we must stress the importance of physical media. Get your kids reading at the very minimum, so that the only recreational activity is rape. Essentially, I don't think the Don Johnson character is as bad as, you know, we're supposed to feel. And once you meet the underground society that survived the nuclear war, the state of Topeka, I don't know if with this kind of environment, I don't know if Don Johnson ever had to do any conilingus, but in the end, it involves eating. Okay. Basically, it's the dog or the woman is your final final dilemma.
Why do you keep giving away these endings?
And I don't know. I mean, it's... I mean, it's... Because some jokes are just like, you better throw it out there and see who gets it, who doesn't. And A Boy and His Dog has been so looked at in negative standpoints just because, again, there's not as much rape in the Dr. George Miller universe. This basically says recreation is maybe you'll get to see a movie and buy a bag of popcorn for your puppy, or maybe you're just gonna have to go and rape a chick. And it's a real sad state of affairs that there is a shortage of women. Like, I mean, even the first scene. I mean, it's a movie that's going to not... I guess why I'm giving the end on that one is because it's a movie that a lot of people are still gonna skip just when you bring up the fact that, oh yeah, women are hard to come by. Because they keep getting raped and murdered.
Oh, yeah, there were a lot of inappropriate relationships in this year's movies.
That's an understatement. So, I did not watch Black Scorpion, which I'm kind of disappointed because it's Roy Harryhausen, but it is a 50s monster
movie. Yeah, Harryhausen and his mentor, Willis O'Brien. I guess some of my understanding was from some of the guys' comments... is that some of the critters in this film were recycled puppets from the famous deleted spider sequence of the original King Kong.
Well, so...
But, yeah, I was familiar with this one from MST3K, but watching a chunk of it on Rift, because I was taking a brief break at the time, was fun. But you skipped over the apple, Russ.
I didn't have that in my notes. I knew it came.
It came between Boy and His Dog and Black Scorpion. It was a movie that came right after the breakfast break. Kind of get everybody back up and running.
Yeah, so Stallone directs better musicals. Like, I will take anything from Satan's Alley over this feature.
I've become one of those... who really appreciates one of a goofball thing can't the Menahem Gullins, the apple really is.
I like, okay, one, I like the first first number, and it makes me wonder, was this Eurovision propaganda?
Yeah, it's a parody of Eurovision.
So it's basically
the movie that teaches us that you can't have a dystopia without disco.
Oh gosh, that is...
It's riffing on like everything from Adam and Eve to the Book of Revelation.
So at least the first Kirk Cameron movie.
Yeah, and it was basically one of Canon's first attempts at something for the international market, as they were getting ready to really start distributing stuff in the U.S.
Right, after Globus bought Canon and got it out of the soft porn.
And as they were going into this, they noticed the success of stuff like Grease and especially Rocky Horror, and they...
Yeah, but Rocky Horror took it took years to do this. Why are you immediately doing the edits? Like, no, this is not gonna work. Like, and then I get bits that take me out of it, like the simplicity of the Speed song.
Yeah.
And then again, it's like, no, this is supposed to be a live. This is supposed to be a concert. That's not. You can't do that on stage. It's like takes me back to Gold Diggers of 1933. No, you can't. Sorry, Billy Barty does not get to go through three sets when you have a freaking stage.
But no, the Apple was a big crowd pleaser. This was one of the returning titles. Stunt Rock was, and the Apple were among the returning titles. Now, after Black Scorpion came She Doubles on Wheels, which I only caught about maybe the last 25 minutes of, because Jessica and I can't really get into the biker pictures, and this is also a Herschel Gordon Lewis one. We did come back for the exciting finale, which, well, it relies on a gag of sorts that, if you remember the Simpsons episode Realty Bites, Snake tried to do this to Homer.
Yes, I've seen this done in,
yeah.
And actually, this is how they closed the remake of 2001 Maniacs, which again, Herschel Gordon Lewis.
Yeah.
They did a remake with Robert Englund and Lynn Shay, which I found to be really good. Sequel, not so much. 2002 Maniacs. But going back to the Apple, it's like, I did notice stuff like, I don't know, I wouldn't mind seeing it as like jukebox musical. The entire premise of fascism, Adam, Eve biting the apple, like, me, the premise is you have
Alfie and Bibi.
Catherine Mary Stewart as Bibi.
Yeah.
And before, you know, I know her best for Last Starfighter.
Right.
And they go to Eurovision, essentially, and their love song, which, love songs just don't sell anymore.
But
captures the audience to the point where they had to use all the red tape. And that is a literal to stop them. And
the problem is that the whole thing has been rigged by the producer of the big act, Pandy and Dandy, with
BIM,
Boogaloo International Music.
Okay.
That's what it means.
Yeah.
So a lot of people miss that it is an acronym. But Boogaloo is a literally devilish figure, and he convinces Bibi to sign on with him and get a totally manufactured image and sound, and she becomes the figurehead of BIM, not only conquering the music industry, but all of society in a spoof of the end times, to the point that everybody has to wear a little triangular logo. The little triangular logo is a sticker. Get fined. Yes.
I bring up the fact that really, I say jukebox musical take on the premise. Really, just give me Ken Russell. He worked for
Best. These are original songs.
Well, yeah, even if they're original songs, he worked for Vestron. You know you can negotiate with this guy.
Actually, Russell... So I needed
more baked beans and more balls.
Well, actually, part of the fun is that the actor who plays Boogaloo, Vladek Shival, he was in a Russell film, and it happened to be Russell's one G-rated movie, 1971's The Boyfriend, which is a meta take on 1920s musicals, where he plays a producer named Dithrill. This one's a good guy. Yeah. But it is very much that kind of arch style,
right,
of performance. And it is a movie that reminds us the devil does get all the best music.
Yes.
Oh, everybody was cheering. Everybody was cheering for the Vim game.
No. No, it was good once. After that, I'm done with Vim. And then you get I did like the scene where he's trying to find, Alfie's trying to find Vivi, and they basically just put him in a gay club. But that brings me back to the homophobia and racism obviously being stated in this one.
Yeah.
Alfie gets with Pandy.
Yeah, she successfully drugs and seduces.
The black member of BIM.
Yeah, and we were talking about this, and that on the one hand, yeah, it's not the most progressive movie around, but it is very sex positive. I mean, even when BB gets rescued and joins up with Alfie again, they join a commune of hippies.
Yes. Oh, we're spoiling the movie because we've just said, well, I'm sorry.
There's still more than that, but even then.
Yes. Then there's... Oh, boy and his dog, screw all the buds and screw all the Eddies. This dog just really, like, reminds me of Sir Didymus. Not Sir Didymus. Who was Sir Didymus's mount?
Ambrosius.
Ambrosius. I, like, the only way you could have done it better was if it was a Muppet. So yes, then we went to Hellcats on Wheels.
Yeah, She Devils on Wheels. The Herschel Gordon Lewis film.
I don't know. You search Hellcats, it comes up too. That
yes, the Hellcats was covered by MST3K. This one was not.
Okay, well, yeah, it's a female biker gang with vest made from. I hope the Michael's
bootleg Pink Panther. Yeah, it looks like something that you do in a hurry with stuff you pick up at Joanne Fabrics or Michael's.
Yes, we do not recognize Hobby Lobby at this 90 for Chilled podcast.
And then we had last of the returning movies.
Well, I think it was kind of appropriate to have She Devils when you have a boy and his dog. At least this time, the men are the ones being exploited. And yes, then you get the...
And we had... they usually work in a blaxploitation movie. And this one was a returning title, Monkey Hustle.
Yes,
which is basically a slice of life vibes kind of movie.
Yeah, a Chicago movie.
Much a big Chicago movie with a...
Yaphet
Kotto and Rudy Ray Moore, strutting his stuff and shooting the breeze. Yes,
very family friendly outside of, well, very black family friendly. I do kind of wish I had June Cleaver around instead of the subtitles.
That was one of the fun things this year, was that they did activate the subtitles on a lot of these movies. Yes. Because they were working from DVDs, and the seemingly AI-generated subtitles for Stunt Rock songs we all agreed, they were a work of art unto themselves. Whoever did this simply could not parse all the Aussie accents, which do get pretty thick, much less the musical numbers. But this also was fun when we were doing stuff like The Apple, where you could sing along if you wanted to. The first time they did it, somebody actually got passed out lyric sheets for all the songs.
Yeah.
This is much easier.
No. Monkey Shuffle.
Monkey Hustle went over real well. And the great side gag when they're pulling the scan.
Moving boxes
around that some of the guys got up on stage and passed around empty boxes back and forth
right
for a montage.
I mean, but you know, somebody did say at one point, what's the plot? And it's like, well, there is the freeway that's coming through.
Yeah.
And as the guy I was sitting with said, oh yeah, we're going to move it to the Spanish district. And yep, that's very Chicago. So then, from Monkey Hustle, we get to our second full moon feature.
And,
Seth Green in...
Well, he's... Yeah, Arcade.
From Albert Pion, who I think is a cinema saint. I mean, you know, like, what? St. Patrick just ran the snakes out of Ireland.
Good. All actors.
Yeah, okay. Sorry, I blew the Wayne's World bit. Wayne, you're nodding. So, Arcade, Charles Band, Albert Pion combined. So, I couldn't help but feel, yeah, I mean, some of the CG is, for 1993, not bad.
Well, I warned Jessica and the others. Look, this is basically Full Moon trying to capitalize on that weird attempt at the VR movie sort of trend from the early 90s, where the most famous work is probably The Lawnmower Man, and that says a lot right there.
Yes, no, I really would have rather had Eddie Furlong.
This was cheap.
Yes, you get Ralphie. I didn't know he was acting that far after.
He still does it occasionally. Yes. But yes, Peter Billings, this is a rare teen role for Peter Billings.
Right.
And he's kind of like he was trying to do a Ricky Schroeder vibe in this.
Yeah, no, he was definitely trying to be a badass Ralphie. Like, I did bring up the fact for my buddy, like, we haven't got the Christmas Story Meta Quest game where you get to play face Black Bart.
But,
So it rips off Tron as well.
And supposedly there was almost a lawsuit over the look of the CGI.
Yeah, I mean, it looked better than the wall screensaver, but not quite Wolfenstein.
This was probably... I was trying to focus on the movie, but when they got to about the last half hour, which is when a lot of this repetitious, very basic CGI is coming in, I was straight up nodding off.
I was
glazing over the way you might if you were watching someone else play a video game.
Right.
The same.
Well, you did catch my biggest disappointment is we directly rip off Labyrinth. One of us always tells the truth.
The Knights and Knaves riddle goes back a lot further than that.
The point of the matter is I wanted to see Seth Green with either a ring ring through his ears, or one that's shut his mouth up. I mean, you can't really have that much Seth Green hate. But
yeah.
It would have been better if they could have gotten a young Mila Kunis would have been way too young, but just so we can, for the sake of laughing at this movie, we could do Shut Up, Meg.
You know, I was suggesting, have you ever considered doing Santa with Muscles? Because they've done other Hulk Hogan films, but no, they think they've done enough Hulk Hogan movies already.
I stand behind Suburban Commando. I am a fan of that one. I will acknowledge.
Arcade, given the crazy premise, which I will not spoil, because... when everybody found out what the twist is regarding why the game is acting up the way it is, they were all like, what? How is this supposed to work?
Did you not pay attention to Monic Toys? It's a perfect symmetry.
Well, yeah, I think that's another thing about the Full Moon thing, is that they keep going back to certain tired ideas.
Yes, I mean... but for Albert Pion's sake, this is such... well, it looked like he used the same filters he used on Nemesis, which I recently reviewed on that show.
Some of the guys were saying, you know, I don't think real Gen X kids spent as much time looking out of windows in filtered lighting, like, yeah, as the movies and TV shows the era would make you think they did.
Some good comments, though, and everything is getting into that nod-off zone you were at. I was like, oh, once we've somehow involved a liquid pool. Double, virtual double dare physical challenge. So after Arcade, it came down to what I consider, I definitely call Trolla on steroids, and just like, I've been curious about this for a while, because it's on Shudder, and, also curious because it was originally a PG-13 cut film.
Mm-hmm.
But on Shudder, it just tells you the premise, and it's like, well, it's a horror channel. It's going to be serious. You don't really notice the actress who's laying next to the T-Rex.
Yes.
It's Tammy and the T-Rex.
From the director of films like The Ice Pirates and Mac and Me.
Well, geez, you say Raffle. Mac? Yes. I love The Ice Pirates, so... Mac and Me, watch the riff tracks or watch a Conan O'Brien Paul Rudd interview to get the gist of that.
Yes, Tammy and the T-Rex's mid-90s effort that was an early credit for both Denise Richards
and Paul Walker.
Yes, as the poor, slightly nerdy guy who's her boyfriend, but who gets beat up and literally thrown to the lions
by, yeah, no, then he pretty by much,
her ex.
No, it was pretty much Panthor and Lionel smegging this guy up.
Yeah, we had a few films that had some kind of big cat this year, I noticed.
Oh, and to go back a moment to Monkey Hustle, that gave us the Rift, the Fest promise of roller skates. Yes. I was getting nervous for a bit.
Yeah.
Like, okay, Ma, you couldn't throw some skates on these fascist cops at some point.
But anyway, Tammy the T-Rex, so Paul Walker gets killed, and Terry Kaiser is an eccentric scientist with really weird minions, even by the standards of this sort of thing.
Including the boy who played Isaac.
Yes, from... and Children of the Corn. Well, he happens to be in search of a brain to put in an animatronic T-Rex.
Yes, he's going to use it for any robot. This is just what he felt was the best thing to experiment on.
So the dual morgue robbing, and soon Paul Walker's brain is making the T-Rex go, and its first order of business is to get revenge on those who killed him as a human, and then he goes to reunite with his true love.
Yes.
And we have, among other things, she has a gay black sidekick, which is off of the mannequin films.
Which we also had in the Affle.
Well, yeah, we had this. That was just a stock trope for a lot of the 80s and early 90s.
Flip Wilson, you hurt a lot of people.
But then you get, and there's wacky hijinks with the authorities. We're trying to figure this out.
There's the trying to get the judgment on what corpse we're going to put Paul Walker's brain into after they get it disconnected. Well,
this speaks to the problem in the movie. Because the dinosaur gets his revenge on the bullies relatively early on for this sort of a film, there's really not a lot left to the story once he's got back in contact with Tammy, or Tanny is in this original cut.
Yes.
Names are not consistent between the two cuts.
I know. Yes.
But there's really nowhere left to take the story except in either really uncomfortable or just almost, I wouldn't say random directions, but it is, as me and Jessica said, the film seems to either want to be like a wacky Disney kids comedy and this more, I guess, trauma-esque, yes, isn't, I mean, a totally I wouldn't call trauma on steroids, though.
I don't see this being too far removed from James Gunn's script of Romeo and Juliet.
Well, in any case,
I mean, after a while, have you watched?
No, I do not. I'm not into the trauma thing.
I didn't think I was going to be into the trauma thing, but I had to nothing. Go. Yeah, okay.
But the Madrew McQueenie is right. Their movies look like they smell bad.
A little bit. It's still good.
But it's incredibly stupid anyway. Slice it, but it's kind of fun until, like, the final half hour just becomes end.
No,
as Tom Servo would say, end.
No, that was She-Devil.
And it becomes less funny and more disturbing. Tammy by the end really seems, I don't know if you'd call it sociopathic, at least psychopathic in how she's handling the whole situation. And how lightly it's treating the issue of her being willing to steal corpses. Doesn't seem right.
She wasn't. Look, once you open the grave, it's a straight up murder of, like, Paul Walker survives the maiming, and then you have the big boo.
That's true. Then
people in the audience were just very appreciative of the fact that you get to see Paul Walker wake up from when we think he's been sedated. I thought I had a dream where I thought I was in Kansas and you were there and you were punch. Like, this is like you say, really disturbing. And I'm thinking, like, this is like me when I'm saying, I'm very much when it came to Charlie Hebdo, it's like, I'm not saying those guys deserve to die, but I saw those cartoons, Wound. I couldn't figure a way to build on that. And usually my thing is like, oh, imagine how you would react if you had a Catholic priest stealing baby Jesus from the manger and doing a stiff on the Mary. And then I just kept building on how ridiculous to make it. And that's the humor, I think, of Tanny and the T-Rex. Yes. How are you?
I mean, I can see why they felt this would be an appropriate way to end the show. It seemed to go over well enough, but
I don't think it should have ended the show just because of how many people by 2 o'clock people are just leaving. I mean, which, come on.
Well, given how dull Arcade was, I couldn't really
blame them. But that was still. No,
I do think the last few films were weaker than some of the earlier ones.
Well,
maybe they could have shuffled things around.
Well, I go back to my first B-Fest when it was the Claw.
Giant Claw.
The Giant Claw and then the stupid cave, like 250-esque feeling things. No, that didn't really work. And I guess you could say they just decided to do the same thing 40 years later. Tammy and the T-Rex is definitely a better choice than Blood Rain, which mm-hmm. was closed last year. But I think that was kind of important because that's the first Ula Bowl they've ever done. So I would say you didn't have anything that broke out like Big Man Japan last year.
I mean, the returning titles all got pretty enthusiastic. Oh, never mind,
Streets of Fire was last year.
Yeah. Well, the returning titles all got really enthusiastic receptions from what I could tell from the audience response. And Wonder Woman and Runaway really got positive receptions.
Yeah, Runaway, again, it's just not my 80s. That's not my 80s. Even your PG boobs. I know, early PG-13.
It was interesting that they had it at, like, the 5:30 a.m. slot.
That threw me off. I usually get to wake up at 8 or so with American Ninja or what I went to my first B-Fest for, Showdown in Little Tokyo.
But coming as it did after a few straight duds when a lot of people were getting a shut eye, I think that the placement was interesting, and the audience seemed really appreciative of it. It was a film they genuinely liked as a movie, and we could still have fun with it. Like, making jokes about everything from Futurama to WALL-E. We were joking about Heartbeeps.
Yeah.
Short Circuit naturally came in because G.W. Bailey's in both films.
Right. No, we need the G.W. Bailey verse. I'm getting out of Detroit. I'm gonna go back. That's what he did between Police Academy and Police Academy 4. Took some time in Detroit, chasing down runaways. Not enough G.W. Bailey. That's just it. There's so many. Yeah, 80s. Poking G.W. Bailey. Be more 80s. But yeah, I go through my stuff and it's like, you got a 3-star with Stunt Rock, and then it's just a kind of a, yeah, I got mine pulled up. So yes, Tammy and the T-Rex, 3.5 stars from, and I'm thinking after a rewatch or two, I might get it up to 4.5.
Yeah, I can't
Monkey
really.
Monkey Hustle, 3 stars.
Yeah, I can't really review these films per se because of the unique nature of the experience and some of them we only saw chunks of.
The Apple was a 1-er for me. Boy and His Dog, 4.5. Runaway 2, Demonic Toys, 2.5. I didn't put my heart on that one. Plan 9 for Outer Space. It's one I love, but it is a 1.5-star movie. Wonder Woman, 1.5. Like, and nobody really got behind me on, like, jokes about, you know what, maybe those cocks just have fighting spirit.
My joke was, you know, Disney's gone too far with the recycling these old properties. This is obviously the backstory of that poor little chicken in Moana.
That's probably the backstory Alan Tudyk gave that poor little chicken in Moana. It's like, really, I really wish I could have gotten somebody to stop and do some play-by-play on the cockfighting. It's like, that's just the weirdest.
Yeah, the people don't care for cruelty to animals in these films, and they were so worried.
Yeah.
And those of us who were awake for the chilling were really worried about what was going to happen to the dog, and they were so happy that the dog made it through. And Dan Haggerty carries him out of the burning building.
There's
It shows you how.
I'm just saying, Michael Cimino really screwed up a lot of filmmaking. You can say no, it was the Campbell Holocaust, but a few dead horses and
and it's interesting also when we have these older folks, you know, the guys who run it, or people like me who come to B-Fest who can appreciate jokes about stuff like Grizzly Adams, but you also got all these younger people who get into this energy of these goofy little movies.
Yeah, no, that is one thing I guess I'll say. It was definitely a Gen X show this year.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think part of it is that it has become clear, I'm reading over recaps and talking with people, that the older movies that back when B-Fest was a new thing in the early 80s and into the 90s, we're only maybe about 20 to 30 years old at most in a lot of cases. And now, in 2024,
you have 70-year-old movies now.
Yeah. But also, like, the people do sometimes complain there's too much of a focus on the 70s and especially the 80s.
Well,
but
that's,
they're like 40 to 50 years on now. That's a lot further off.
Well, and keep in mind, the 70s and 80s are an interesting time because that's when we had...
Yeah, I mean, it was when exploitation industries got a lot bigger and more international.
Right, but I'm also saying that it's just the fact that this was like a... You know, after 75, that's the age of the blockbuster.
Yeah.
And basically now anything made on the cheap is kind of worship because it was made on the cheap in the 80s. And, so I think it's just like, I mean, the little woman who hosted the show, I said it was her third time, yeah. And I think she's probably going to the university.
Yeah.
So I'm presuming that she might only have one or two left before she's... She had an accent, so could be going home, but...
But.
So I'm just saying that... I don't know. I think we needed something from the from 2004 just so we can kind of say, hey, so the millennials could get something.
I don't know. I mean, millennials know a lot of 80s and 90s stuff perfectly fine.
Well, yeah, but then they don't know, then they have that 70s hole.
Well, that's true.
Like, the only movie they have from the 70s real is Star Wars and that Roald Dahl adaptation where a 10-year-old girl uses the word twat.
Twit.
No, I'm pretty sure that was those twats.
But
I think the subtitles told me twat on the last watch.
But looking at it is interesting how the fun, cheesy cinema, which is, like, they'll say in the advertising it's about the worst movies ever, but that's not quite accurate.
No,
it's,
not at all.
It's there, fun with cheese.
Should be some deep hurting.
Yeah.
And we have not had the deep hurting that was Food Fight. Like, I've been meaning, because the guy who created the... I go to a lot of his panels. The guy who created the mascot for the tuna mascot,
Charlie and Tuna.
Yeah, he does a lot of the. He's always at the fan expos.
Yeah,
I see a lot of his panels. He's pretty well versed, but he's the guy who created that. And it's like I really want to ask, dude, Food Fight.
But what was I going to say?
So
the prop. It actually does show, though, how in the modern franchise age, beyond the blockbuster that started in the turn of, as the turn of the millennium war.
Oh no! You
wasn't
were
bringing, there right away, but
you brought up the big thing though when we were in the car, as you were saying, Congo is something a lot of people are pulling for.
Not a lot of people. It was one of the guys had suggested maybe they should try Congo one year, but the other said, well, no, because that movie is... That's
2 hours, 15 minutes, more than likely.
2-plus hours, so if the audience didn't get into it. And yeah, Godzilla 98 was pretty much a disaster in 2006.
Yes, you can't have movies where we are, like... I didn't hear the end chants for Tammy, but... She Devils,
yeah,
and there's still 30 minutes left. Gosh,
it has always been there's been 30 minutes of this movie left.
But, yes, but it really felt like
yeah.
I don't think it was that deep hurting because it's Herschel Gordon Lewis, and I guess I was taking Herschel Gordon Lewis movies Armel Lore. It's a Chicago-based alcohol, which people say, think of grapefruit and you'll get through with it. It's been described by my best friend as smells of flowers, tastes of rotting meat. I love the stuff, but I do also acknowledge it's a masochistic endeavor.
Well, I think about Turn of the Millennium movies and how, filmmaking got more bloated and... more franchise-based and harder to pick up on if you don't know all the other installments. Whereas with, with a lot of the Godzilla movies, in the various eras of that particular series, you can at least pick up one, like a random title, and just get the gist of it. That's going to be a lot harder to do with, like, the cheesier superhero movies we've had in the last... 10 years or so.
Well, and it goes back to what you're saying about franchises and such. Yeah, you know, if you're going to be making sequels, why is the movie 2 hours long?
But
I'm just saying, like, I don't know. But then again, you have Iron Man, you have Kick-Ass, perfect superhero movies, in my opinion.
But
Batman 89.
They're generally, in these cases, we have cheesier and or bad movies that just wouldn't work at B-Fest because they're long and they're bloated. And you can't have fun with them because of this, because especially with the Marvel movies, although they were certainly not the first that became so self-referential and were trying to cut themselves at the pass with, as Jessica likes to put it, we know this is stupid too. Instead of embracing and celebrating the wackier aspects, and just playing them out straight and letting the chips fall where they may, the way something like a Runaway does. And that it's fun, and then you get to have fun with it. That's how I look at it. We're not seeing those kind of movies quite so often anymore.
But here's the thing. But you keep bringing up Runaway, and as I say, it's like, is it fun? You get a robot blowing up. We could have cut the scene where she gets her first victory over a robot because Hitchcock stuff. You get a good shootout, and then it's like police procedural stuff falls flat for me. And again, they're not taking the time to at least Dirty Harriet, you know, maybe say a cool line, you know, like a little hip. I think this, like, thank God Tom Selleck was not Indiana freaking Jones.
But what I'm saying is that it's much more frustrating now that when a superhero movie or even animated features have fallen into this in a lot of cases. They fall. This is one of the problems I have with, like, the CGI Disney features, is they keep trying to head off any real sincerity, except maybe in the third act at the pass, with people constantly quipping or doing self-referential stuff. And,
well, shouldn't Disney be staying in their own lanes since Pixar gets to do all the touching stuff? I mean, we haven't really gotten a good body count in 3D Disney movies yet.
Yeah, we haven't. Well, as we were saying, I was discussing this with Jessica. Or Metzler cites in his essay for the Criterion disc of the Guillermo del Toro Pinocchio film, what we get is shrink-wrapped and snarky fantasy movies for children now. We do not get sincere ones that fully embrace elements of terror or transcendence that were a big thing even into some 90s titles.
Well, I think the issue there becomes the fact that you want to make sure you're basically parent, like, our little sister. You know, I think we were fine growing up on Star Wars and Flash Gordon. Flash Gordon is basically, Mom didn't want us watching Star Wars anymore. I'm just saying that I think parents have become way too sensitive over compensating, and so it's like Bluey is gold, probably because it's not American. Where, you know, and never mind in Australia, there, you know, it might go back to the toxic masculinity the country deals with, but the fact of the matter is, you know, it's okay for stuff to poop on Australian TV now. And Americans, no, we don't want to talk to our kids about bums. And so you have movies that are so freaking tame now.
Yeah.
And the snark comes from, well, we still have to make sure that parents get something out of it.
Well, that's just not the, you can't just do, create this corporatized, you have to check it elements off the Shrek list thing. Look, not everyone loves Shrek, and a lot of us, it was one of those hits where everybody learned the wrong lessons from it.
Yes.
Disney most of all. And I wish they'd come around to it again. And when you look at, like, Jessica and I, when we looked over all the stuff they cut from or altered for Wish, and how there really was a potentially romantic, transcendent fantasy that they turned their back on, as seemingly because they wanted to market plushies and they didn't want parents to complain and they didn't want people to come and they didn't want to turn off boys by making something that could be perceived as girly. They lost so much potential.
Well, you know what they lost? I really wanted to try to figure out a good joke once the Star Kite came in Hot Potato. Oh, there's a big merchandise. Like, I didn't know if I'd be heard. There's a big merchandising opportunity there. I don't even think anybody got to my, well, that was easy. That was easy. Barely an inconvenience. So, I mean, that's going a little, I mean, I don't know if there's going to be a course correction, because I think we're just getting dumber.
Well, Drew McWeeny was talking about that in his latest Substack newsletter, that, you know, he's never seen, as he was putting it, he's never seen theatrical distribution in this country been so bad. In terms of the lack of product, the lack of quality product, and the way the studios have become absolutely...
Well, they...
mercenary in how they're treating films.
Well, they're about to become one giant conglomerate anyhow.
Or are they? Because there's a very good chance, as he was pointing out, that further mergers or buyouts could see these companies start to be dissolved into component parts.
That could be one place becomes one giant...
They may not be too big to fail anymore.
No, that's too big to fail is not a thing that exists. No, it basically Warner is trying to become that holding company before Disney does it. And Disney still runs things a lot better than most.
Well, they haven't had a profitable movie, truly profitable movie, that isn't, I wouldn't say was a qualified success since Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3.
Yeah,
and they've
had
a run of disasters.
Yeah,
they have not figured out how to get people to come back to theaters for the animated films.
With Disney, you say run of disasters, and like, yeah, that's kind of Disney's trademark. Every decade, they have a huge slump.
Every 10 to 20 years, there's a huge slump.
Yeah.
But it's a lot harder to see how they're going to pull themselves out of it this time, because they've alienated a lot of talent. They've given up on certain styles of animation to the point they have to outsource it.
Well, you say alienated, it's like, I don't see that, because it's like, people do come back to Disney. I think they're... What Warner Brothers should really be doing is taking that tax write-off money and making Six Flags a lot cooler. Like, oh, they're copying, like... But when it comes to the merger thing, I mean, you have the Warner Brothers, Paramount...
And Warner Brothers becoming
these...
Then
you have the next thing in sports, which is going to be ESPN, mm-hmm. Fox, and Paramount... Universal doesn't have to get involved because they have the apparatus to distribute it.
But you see the horrors that are being unleashed with how Warner Brothers is taking all these movies and turning them into tax write-offs. And with no respect for any of the people involved in the creative capacity on those films.
Well, here, the biggest problem with these tax write-offs are it's IP that people love.
But they're not going to keep loving it if they don't get a chance to enjoy well-made takes on it.
Well, Batgirl is coming out of the DCEU, and Acme versus Coyote was going to be really meta and could fall right on its ass.
But the thing was, the were talked about because they were doing, you know, trying focus group screenings and stuff, and I guess some footage even leaked out, like Jessica was talking about looking at some of what came out, and it was clear that there were was something really promising there.
Well, I'm not that saying the
people were really positive about, well, in a way they certainly weren't with Space Jam: A New Legacy.
Right. Well,
why is that movie okay, but not Coyote vs. Acme, which also had a lower budget, from what I can tell?
Well, that one is because you have the celebrity carrying that feature. Wiley doesn't talk, so he can't do the LeBron Taco Tuesday viral thing. No, so the problem really is, like, if you're going to be planning to do movies for write-offs, this is where we can start doing original stuff.
But if you don't care about your supposedly valuable IPs, you're not going to, that's not going to speak to people who are willing to take risks on original icon, or at least untested ideas.
Well, you know, you just go and do it on a $30 million budget. You go and ruin some indie director, put some indie director's career on the line, which is probably going to happen a lot now since Warner has got its A24 connection. And I'm just saying, if you're going to do a tax write-off, do it for $30 million, not nine figures. I guess my stance is, people complain, oh, this is happening, it's bad. It's like, okay, yeah, it's happening, it's bad. But nobody's coming up with solutions. They're just saying, you should not be allowed to do this. And that does not work.
Well, no, it would be very hard to work in that fashion, true. But it shouldn't be a legal thing.
How else are you going to change it?
This is an ethical and moral concern as to how you treat the work of other people.
Right. And when, okay, so no, it should become that's just it then. We shouldn't be trying to make it a legal thing. If something's ethically, we can all agree upon, is ethically wrong. The only people who don't agree upon is the rich people, and they're wrong all the bloody time anyhow. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. That's just it. You say it shouldn't be happening. Well, if it shouldn't be happening, there should be a law. So, quit saying it shouldn't be happening and go and just create new stuff and go to A24 until they are totally absorbed by Warner Brothers. There's a chance that's not going to happen. Or you give me $50,000 to make my movie. Main Event of the Dead. Your zombie comedy, professional wrestling zombie comedy done right. I have not seen Pro Wrestlers versus Zombies, but I've read all the synopsis, and it doesn't, just not meant to work. You can't go and do voodoo curses on Roddy Piper. So, I mean, yeah.
Well, I guess
Hell Comes to Frogtown. That should be a B-Fest movie.
Well, I guess this is where we should break off for the night.
No,
it's getting late. I want low TV.
Yeah, no, I got you. So, yeah, with that said, thank you for listening to this episode of 90 for Jill the Podcast with Cat Bus Russ. And my guest, the Poetic Critic. You can find the Poetic Critic on Letterboxd. Username there is the Poetic Critic, all one word. I'm on Letterboxd as well as CM Darth. That's C as in cool, M as in movies, Darth as in the Sith Lord. And you can also find me pretty much on any platform now under Cat Bus Russ, or any of the cool platforms, I think. Threads is not cool. So Cat Bus Russ on Twitter. Or I do love how my buddy Andrew TD at Couchman Banks likes to just refer to it as the platform formerly known as Twitter. Where I think, as I say, I've said, I think there's a Midwest Gen X where you get to add another 3 years onto it because it takes so long to get stuff here. So yes, at CatBusRuss on Twitter, at RussStevens at Mastodon.social, or at CatBusRuss at Mastodon.social. And then I don't know why we have these bloated usernames on Blue Sky, since it's not supposed to be like Mastodon, but that's at CatBusRuss at BSKY. No, sorry, at CatBusRuss.BSKY.com. It just bollocks. Search CatBusRuss, you'll find me, and if you need to fill your home with the dulcet tones of Russ Stevens, you can ask your Amazon Echo or Google Nest device to play a podcast by CatBusRuss. Thank you very much for Station Marie Harden keeping an eye on me, keeping me out of trouble. You know, you don't want to get to, I know you don't want to end up getting stuck in Cook County Jail, unless you're going to write a Chicago movie about it with hopes of it arriving at B-Fest. But I hope you're taking care of the people you touched in your life as well, Stacia. And I hope you're squeezing the oh-so-fluffy ghost of Skimble Shanks. Thanks again for coming to the 90 for Chill the Podcast, and have yourselves a good week. And before I forget, you can help the podcast out by rating and subscribing on your favorite podcast apps. 5 stars for the review. Be as honest as you like with the text. Otherwise, if you want to be on the show, you can send an email to rustthebus07@gmail.com. That's RUSSTHEBUS07@gmail.com. And offer me a movie, a director, a theme, an actor. Try to focus on sub-100-minute movies, but I can make anything work. So if we're going to do Amadeus, I am ready. With that said, then, you could also hit me up on my socials again. That's at CatBusRuss on the platform formerly known as Twitter, at CatBusRuss on Blue Sky, and at RussStevens at Mastodon.social on Mastodon. Thank you again for visiting 90 for Chill the Podcast, and can I get a woohoo?